Hi, Matthew. Welcome to episode 31 of the Performance Advantage podcast. And we're talking to Jay Barrett, mental skills coach, performance trainer, everything.
Well, I mean, we dial in the right words by the time we get to it, but we weren't sure what to call him actually at first. It's funny,
yeah,
actually.
It is an all-encompassing topic, but yeah.
It's funny if we, I was thinking back, you know, because we have differing views on mental skills coaching. And the argument that you and I always had was we have a person at the end of a race, you know, and I guess for me, I picture a marathon race. I don't know why, but there's two people coming into the finish. They're about to have a sprint finish. And the winner wins because they wanted it more. And I remember at one of our early episodes, we kind of went back and forth on arguing this point. I was like, there's no way that this person wanted it more. And then I guess the more like I thought about it, the more I thought, well, actually, okay, maybe Will's kind of right. Maybe the mental skills component did come in into this finish of this marathon race where there's a sprint finish. So I've been coming around to this mental skills stuff. So it was cool to finally get Jay on to give his side.
I think that's one aspect of it where you were skeptical. I know because of the experience like we have together, there are parts of like performance anxiety, process thinking that we went over with Jay that you are 100% supportive of. But it's just, yeah, the mental physical side of like, all right, so we are 100 meters away from the finish. We both got here. What is the defining factor between first and second in this situation? Maybe it's like 50 meters, any kind of race, you know, like, what is it? Who knows?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I'm definitely coming around. Like, I never really like doubted sports psychology or the other aspects that go along with it, including the mental skills training, but I've definitely been considering it a lot more, so glad to finally get Jay on. But what have you been up to, Will? I know you were down my way last weekend, weren't you?
Yeah, we had Road Relays, which is a pretty awesome event where you represent your club, team of seven. It's pretty much everyone runs 10 kilometers each, tagging in, running with a baton through the
baton,
you know, the farm, well, on roads. Yes, baton. So that was cool. Pretty massive party afterwards. So feeling a little seedy this week, but ready for 50Ks this weekend.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
This is my last race of the season.
Oh, cool. So then it's time for chocolate. See, I thought like actually your season ended.
Yeah.
Maybe last week. I was like, how's the chocolate going? And you're like, dude, I still have one more race. Like, oh, okay. Big job.
Yeah. So it's been a different experience because I've had to recover from the 100, but I've also had to maintain training, for the 50K, because normally it's the other way around where I'd finish my season this coming weekend for the Taupo 100K Ultra, which I've done the last previous 3 years. And then I've been able to sort of ride it off and then get back into it for the summer. Whereas this time it was, the 100K was a lot earlier, so it's been an interesting process. I've responded really well. You know, I talked to you, Matt, at the beginning of last show about like, oh my God, I'm so unfit. I tapered into the 100, then I haven't trained after it, so how am I going to get through 50? After I did the best 100K run.
Come on.
100-kilometer run of my life, and I'm questioning whether I'm going to be fit enough to run 50.
So. You were looking at the Strava fitness metrics, weren't you? Don't tell me you were looking at that. But your fitness doesn't work like that. It doesn't just go away. And I've been working with one of my athletes who's come off a break at the end of the season with actually a little injury that was unplanned. Just getting back. And
unplanned
like,
injury.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were thinking like, oh, maybe we should do this injury. Do you want to do it now or do it later? But it just happened on its own. So, getting back into it, and then you feel like a slug. Like you just feel horrible. It's the same thing when you come back from holiday. Like, you just feel so slow. But actually, like, it only takes about a week, and then you're starting to feel fit again. So for you, because you've continued training, your fitness just didn't just go away. But I guess this weekend's the final test. No pressure.
Yeah, well, like, for the 10 kilometers over the weekend, if we look at power rather than pace, because it's quite an undulating, I had a net gain on my run. It was about 36 minute 10, you know, and that's, for me, if it was, and you know, the power equivalent of around a 34-ish something. So not my best, but by far, far from my worst. You know, the 5 days after when I had to qualify for the team, and I ran 37 and a half minutes, you know, it's significantly quicker than that on a harder course, running, maintaining a higher power output. So everything is pointing in the right direction, but I've started working with Jay on the mental skills side of things, because when you come to performance and coming off of like 100, you don't know. You can try your best, but was that good enough? And having mental skills or processes that you can tick and achieve, like you can achieve splits, you know, or placings, or hitting nutritional targets, drinking, you can tick those and go, oh, look, did my nutrition work? I had a gel every 20 minutes, just like I had planned. I did it. I normally struggle, and I did that. That's a win, you know, regardless of the outcome. And the mental side of things is the same. Did I stay mentally relaxed? Did I start thinking about the finish, or was I focused on my form? So that's been awesome to integrate. And yeah, we might as well, like, you know, Jay, from your, you know, work with the national mountain bike team. Do you want to introduce him?
Yeah. So, I know Jay's been helping with the New Zealand mountain bike hub for a while. And when I was invited to come along as a coach, Jay came in and, you know, gave this talk. I was like, wow. Like, what, like, he wasn't like blowing my mind per se and saying things that like were just totally out there. And I think that's what really got me, is that like when Jay was talking about working on mental skills for mountain bikers, you know, and they were young riders, super high level, like everything he was saying was so relatable. So everything he said, he gave a couple 1 hour talks, everything he said, I was like, yeah, I believe you. And, you know, I was like sitting there, I was like, holy cow, I need to listen to this one. And I just thought that was really good. Like, you know, we talk about it and we try and relate with our athletes on a level of mental skills, just because it kind of happens, because our athletes are always going through tough times. And we talk about this a little bit more in the podcast, but we're not mental skills coaches. So we try and implement some of the same things, but we just don't do it the way that a real mental skills coach like Jay does. So when I was hearing the things that he was saying, I was like, look, Will, we really need to get Jay on the podcast. And you were all for it. So because you believe all this stuff, and you have way before anyone else did, and you were implementing mental skills training in yourself when I met you. You know, so Jay's coming at this from a rugby background and from a downhill mountain biking background. I know his brother rides, and his brother's a coach as well. I think they do strength training, and Jay's had the opportunity to work with great athletes across different sports as well. So it fits with the listeners of our podcast really well, because we approach endurance sport, mountain biking, running kind of things all in one. So Jay, I think, really fits that bill. So we're really lucky to have Jay Barrett, mental skills trainer, on our show.
Awesome. Well, let's bring him on.
Welcome, Jay Barrett. Welcome to the show.
Oh, exciting to be here.
Yeah. So where are you checking in with us from?
So I'm currently in the Viaduct Marina in Auckland, and a friend has a super yacht down here. So when I'm based in and around Auckland doing my sessions here, and it's in Auckland City, This is kind of my hub, and I work in and out.
Yeah, so we do this over video, and I was looking at Jay, I was looking behind him, I was like, where the heck are you? And like in some fancy hotel or something. Turns out, no, it's just a super yacht. So
yeah,
that's a pretty cool place to do work.
And it just so happens the guy that owns it, so he was a professional water skier over in the United States and was Rip Cool sponsored Pepsi.
Sweet. Pretty good place to do work too. We were talking before and you were saying you're a mental skills trainer.
Yeah.
First off, like, I told everyone where we met and how we met and how I thought like you'd be really good for the show. But mental skills trainer, can you just give us... like, tell us what that is, because when I think sports psychology, I'm thinking, like, no one knows what to think, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, so when we've got sports psychology, we've got a person that can both help with performance psychology and then help with the mental health side of psychology. So the mental health side of psychology is, for example, anxiety and depression across a number of areas in someone's life. When we talk about the performance side of psychology, so performance psychology, we talk about ways on how to improve how you act or behave in a situation in relation to performance. So it could be workplace performance, it could be sports performance in this case. So as a mental skills trainer or a performance psychology coach, you work in the performance psychology area. So trying to make someone perform better using psychological tools. And an example, so there's four main areas I try to work at, and that's performance alignment. So helping someone develop alignment to where they want to go. So that overall or the outcome goal at the end. Making sure or helping them be well through the process, so they're not just going in, burning out, coming back, going and burning out, coming back, going and burning out, coming back. Making sure the plan that they have in and around the other professionals, like you both, is something that can be sustained from a mental side of things. Performance mindsets, which is helping you understand a situation, especially and with a lot of us, it's a win-lose situation if we're only focused on coming first as opposed to second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh. How do we frame our ride in a way that we can get the most out of it at the end and understand the win or the loss? And then also those micro performance tools that you could use within your ride that are going to help you relax or add a bit of arousal to what you're doing or help you be mentally tough. So that is a massive snapshot of what it would be like.
Cool. Yeah.
Mm.
And then where did, like, how did you end up here? You know, we introduced you as an ex-World Cup downhiller. And so where's, yeah, where does that lead, you know?
Cool. Yeah, like so you don't wake up one day and be like, I'm going to be a mental skills coach. Right? Like, you would have had a long path to get here.
Yeah, so I'll explain my background. So I rode for New Zealand way too long ago. But to be honest, I didn't perform well. I didn't perform to the standard that I wanted to. I didn't get the results that I wanted to. So it kind of hit me a bit, and I got a bit off track when it came to the training side of things. I was really lucky. I had Wide Open Distributors sponsoring me, and they were amazing. Dog Boy there is spot on. That was probably my first big introduction to, oh geez, like I'm physically so ready, but where's this mental side? Like, I'm just not coping well. And for me, it was just going, okay, all right, let's kind of step back and have a look at it. At this point in time, I was also part of a rugby development group, and we had a mental skills trainer come in and talk to our group. And I remember sitting there thinking, okay, how do I get this guy's job? Like, the sports stuff, like, awesome, but how the hell do I get this guy's job? Like, what he's doing is awesome. So I actually arranged a meeting with the guy about a year later, and he explained the process of, okay, university, go this pathway, all this kind of stuff. So at that point in time, I decided to pursue university, what, 5 years down the track. So I majored in psychology and then came up and I've got my master's in performance psychology, and that's within business and sports. It's still a Bachelor of Science master's in psychology, but I've just taken a performance focus. But yeah, that's probably my introduction. It was, here's this whole area which we don't really know much about. A lot of sports teams and a lot of athletes do, but here's this whole area that for us and for me in downhill, it would be a massive help to have this mental game absolutely dialed, because at the end of the day, you've got to throw yourself down a hill and you've got to do it as fast as possible. So this is just like a huge area that we can use to strengthen our other areas and strengthen our riding. And that's kind of how I got into it. And for the, especially the downhill and the mountain biking and the cross country, how could I be of service to give these groups a tool that I didn't have when I was riding? And that's why I decided to pursue it and stay with it. Have I missed anything that you thought would be necessary?
Well, I mean, there's 5 years in there that, you know, you went through learning all of it, but that's a nice synopsis of the 5 years.
The undergrad that I did in, so I did it at Dunedin University or Otago University, and that was really behavior research based part of psychology. So when our brain does this, or when this part of our brain fires, what happens? Also behavior, so developmental psychology was a big part of it. Also structures and plans. So how do we set up a sports environment or even a work environment to be as productive as possible, and for the athlete to have as much satisfaction as possible in their role. So that covered a bit of that side of things. But yeah, the undergrad was more based on kind of research and, it's all based on research, but based on kind of cognitive and behavioral responses to situations or stimuli, so lights and reaction time.
So there's like a lot of science going on in there, like as you're, because I think there's this perception when people think about sports psychology, like, oh, what the heck is sport? Mm. Is that like witchcraft or something? Or like, what the heck are you guys doing? Like,
yeah, I did the same too.
Was introduced to it, the Massey University, I was there for honors, and we got access to, because of the, who was there, Professor Gary Hermanson. And so we had like, as part of our package, as a like academy athlete, we got a couple hours with him each term, semester. Oh, wow. And this is where, and then people would like made fun of me, like just for going, like, oh yeah, what are you gonna, like, are you, you know, like, what were they saying? Sort of like, you need to perform physically, like, don't worry about your head kind of thing. It was just the perception on of it. And talking to Gary, you know, he said the first Olympics he went to, he had to meet people in secret. Like, no one wanted to be seen going to the sports psychologist or the shrink, you know, like, because it was like, you're mentally not strong enough to perform at a certain level. And when I went, I had no idea, and then realized, like, it was just like what Matt and I do in terms of preparing the physiology of an athlete, putting those plans in place, putting those structures, there's stimuli and adaptation, and it was all the same, but for the mind. And I was like, this has huge potential. But then it's still like, yeah, I don't know, it's not, you may have seen it differently, like you're in the industry, but I haven't seen it really take on like sports coaching has.
Do you still see those same barriers, Jay? Like, are people like coming to you and be like, ooh, yeah, let's go meet back here, and I don't want anyone to know that I'm talking to you. I think that, like, aren't there laws around it, actually? There are laws around, like, general rules in your field where maybe, like, you just maybe don't talk about some things.
Yeah, so
it's a lot of questions.
That is a lot of questions. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a lot of questions. So I'll start with the last one because I remember that first. Since there is a lot of work around, well, me as a, technically I'm a coach, So mental skills coach, mental skills trainer. So there's not as many rules. But if you're working as a psychologist and as a member of the New Zealand Psychologist Board in New Zealand, since you're working with some information, so if we talk about the mental health side of things, that could be, or even the mental performance, that could be some stuff that someone doesn't want someone else to know. They might not want them to know that they're having a hard time, even though our stats in New Zealand show that 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 New Zealanders might have some depressive thoughts at some point. But I won't go into that. What I will say is there's help. And those sports psychologists, they're there to help. They're amazing. And the fact that it should be considered as a massive part of someone's kind of training plan, if not a mental skills trainer, a sports psychologist. But if I go back to the question, there is a lot of confidentiality and anonymity in the space. But I would say a lot of sports people are really receptive to it now because it's quite common. If we look at the All Blacks, so Gilbert Anoka started working with them, 12 years ago. And this was the time, the All Blacks have always been good, but then all of a sudden they just turned into something else. I think they had a 92% winning rate or something with him as the mental skills trainer. So I think he's really paved the way for us moving in behind him and trying to do good work. But yeah, I think the perceptions are slowly shifting in regards to how people see a mental skills trainer. But it'd be like anything. I can imagine at a certain point in time in history, people going for a run to train for a race would have been a bit uncommon. Yeah, I think the perception's shifting. But yeah, there are a lot of, I guess, barriers that I have to be aware of when it comes to which information can be shared and which information can't and things like that. So yeah, that probably slows down the process.
Yeah, do you see anyone like with what Will experienced, like thinking like, why are you going to see a mental skills trainer? And you know, because Will was seeing this from fellow athlete, like why are people still doing that?
To be honest, if I had the answer, geez, that'd be pretty awesome. But I guess it might just be a learned reaction to how they see it personally or how they've grown up seeing it. Like Will said, they might still see mental skills trainers as a shrink that's going to come in and I need to be really scared because they might be reading my mind and things like that. It's just like anything. I bet you at a point in time, and I said it before, we saw nutrition as this uncommon thing. Or why would we train our nutrition? Like, why do I need to eat all this little fancy stuff that's organic and fresh and not processed or something like that? But I guess the way that I move around it or navigate how I provide someone with mental skills training, if that happens, is it's always related back to their performance, because at the end of the day, you're just this extra resource to help that person perform under different circumstances or situations. So always relating it back to, oh, hey, like, have you ever thought about using this technique? And, oh, why would we use it? Oh, far out. Like, imagine if it could help you relax while you're at the competition. Or so if we go back to the XC guys, what happens if you're at a race for 3 days and the race is on the last day and you notice yourself getting quite nervous leading into it and those performance anxieties starting to creep up there? Cool. So imagine if we can introduce this tool that's going to help you relax. Would you be willing to do that? And if they go, yes, yeah, I am. And then you provide them with a tool and then just monitor them over those 3 days and go, hey, like, where have you started using it? Cool. What happens if you use it here? You think you'd be keen to try that? And hopefully say, yes, yeah, I am. And that's how I introduce it when it is a bit uncommon for, if someone doesn't see it as, oh, why am I doing this? Or they see it as, why would I use this? This sounds a bit fluffy.
I think at the moment it's like still like perceived as like a reactive thing where you only seek the help of a mental skills coach if you're having an issue. But from talking to you before, it's like, well, actually, this should be a really important, like, this should be just one piece of the puzzle in this whole approach of becoming a better athlete. Like, it doesn't have to be a reactive thing for when there's a problem. It can be a proactive thing so that you can strengthen your mental skills and just be that much better.
100%. And I'm not going to sit here and say that mental skills is more important than another aspect of your training, but incorporating it as part of your training is massive. Because, I mean, if we're looking at it from a reactive approach, the problem has to happen before you then go and seek help in your performance. So if you're doing it that way, your confidence is probably, or your confidence may have had a little tumble, you may have got a bit off track. Things like that has already happened. If we look at it from a proactive approach, we're training you to deal with situations before they've even happened. And that way, when it does happen, or if it happens, you've got the toolkit to kind of move through it and go, all right, sweet, this is my process, these are my tools. Confidence hopefully isn't hit as much. You might actually grow and get bigger out of it. We don't know. So that's massive in creating for me personally, creating this athlete which performs consistently week in, week out. That being proactive is massive.
Yeah. Nice. Will, I'm just curious about your experiences when you were going to see Gary. So Gary's written a couple books on sports psychology, Going Mental in Sport.
Gary is one of the greatest of all time, especially when it comes to New Zealand sports psychology. His textbooks and the help he's given us coming in behind him is... Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah, I always recommend his book to my athletes. Like, I have a copy here in my library, and I, you know, give it out to athletes. It's been sent around the world a few times. Luckily, I keep getting it back. But I actually haven't read the whole thing myself. I know Will has read it multiple times.
Yeah. it was really an eye-opener. Like, I guess when I think about athletes I work with, and you introduce them to something like a heart rate monitor, and you go, look at how we can monitor your intensity objectively. Like, it's when your heart rate's really high, you're training really hard. When it's low, you know, and all these different things, you go, oh, wow, I sort of just ran, or I just rode my bike up a hill. I had no way of looking at things. Although I knew I was doing it, it was kind of like that. Like, I was having, I don't want to say issues, but like, you know, with, at that time I was a triathlete and I was having difficulty with the swim, and I couldn't figure it out. Like, there's I was performing outside of the race, and within the race there was a detachment from my performance and my ability. So I was able to identify that and then get, like Jay's saying, these tools, like a heart rate monitor, but for my mind. I had like this identification of what was potentially causing the detachment in like performance and ability, and then sort of, yeah, being able to integrate like these mental skills into bringing those two aspects back in line. And it started, like, you'd think it would potentially, you'd go, oh, well, it's in the race. You know, I start and then I think this and I think this. Or I do this, but it starts a lot further back from that. And it was like, yeah, ever since then, it was, I've read books, I've talked more with, different people like Jay. And it's another piece of the puzzle. Like when we were talking to, who's the mountain bike skills?
Harlan. Yeah.
Sorry, I just, so a couple episodes ago, you know, we're talking to him and it's the same sort of thing. Like, until you go and see a mountain bike skills guy, you don't realize the skills you don't have. Like, he was talking about that with the World Cup guys. He's like, they choose specific lines based off of their abilities rather than trying to increase their ability to make it available to a specific, it's just those different layers of performance that, you know, you're able to access.
Yeah.
And imagine if, if someone was doing the physical component of their puzzle and they come in and go, all right, we're only going to train legs. or we're only going to train upper body. And you might just be sitting there just going, what are you talking about? Like, you're missing half the body here. Like, so that could be another way of looking at this puzzle of going, okay, why are we only doing this physical? Like, there's this whole mental side of things too. And then you add to it nutrition, and then you add to it actual bike tactical knowledge, and then you add the riding itself. At the end of the day, it's all there to help you become a better athlete. And if you're going to use all those resources, you might give yourself a better chance to become a better athlete.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, Will and I talk about when we're working with our athletes is, you know, because like when we're working with the pros or really anyone, training's pretty straightforward. So you do your training, and sometimes it really, really sucks. No matter what level you're at, sometimes training really, really sucks. And we all know that. Like, everyone listening can relate to that, right? But a lot of, like, especially with the pros, a lot of times, like, they're doing so much training, and then their races are so important to them, or, you know, there's a lot invested in it or something, that a lot of what we do as physical coaches is we end up trying to help them through these really tough times, because, you know, we see it. And one of the most important things that we do in our line of work is developing the relationship over time with the athlete, because there's a lot of back and forth day to day about, you know, what training session and how do we change this? How do we get better physically? So over time, we do develop that relationship, and then we get a lot of feedback, and whether it's purposeful or not from the athlete, we see them going through these really hard times, and we know that it's hard. So we try and help them through as best we can, but we're not mental skills coaches. We're here like helping them get the most out of their body by helping them by designing training for them. And here we are like trying to help them through these really, really tough times. And for us, we're like, well, actually, this isn't really our specialty. We're trying really hard, but maybe the athlete needs actually something a little more. And it's about like, how do we bring something into that, someone else into the puzzle? Because I know you work with really big teams, like you work with big rugby teams and stuff as a piece of the puzzle. And they have important coaches that they build relationships to, like on the physical side, that they're with them day to day. Like, how do you slide in and integrate into that?
If I relate what I do in the rugby space and use a mountain bike team to explain it, would that help?
Yeah.
Cool, sweet. So if I started off working with a mountain bike team, obviously I'd be really clear around what my background is, what's my purpose? What's my purpose as part of the team? And also the help that I can provide them as athletes. And if there's something that I think should be taken further, also putting those referral processes in place. So who would be the best expert to help me in this situation or help this athlete move through? So that's kind of the role I take when I move into a team space. Once I'm there, I actually had a mentor of mine, and he explained it as griller in the mist. So you're just a griller in the mist. You'll hang around, you'll be around. So that way, when something pops up, and it might not even be mental skills, it might be something else that they feel comfortable to talk to. And it's like you've built up these relationships over time. When it is something that's mental skills and I can help with, it's just like, oh, okay, cool. So would you be keen to look into this? Because I think it could help this. So if we look at someone's quite stressed in a race environment, and it's just like, cool, have you ever thought about using, it might be breathing, to help you kind of de-stress and relax while you're at the competition? And they're looking at me going, why would I use my breathing? I have to breathe anyway. And then it's like, exactly, you have to breathe anyway. So why don't we use it to your advantage? So just little things like that. That's how I would integrate it. It's, let's work at these big rocks that people know happen, and they're going, I might be stuck with this thing. as part of my like race weekend, and it just happens because it's always happened. But what happens if these mental skills tools can come in and actually remove that part of your race weekend that you don't enjoy and help you perform better? So that's, I guess, in a nutshell, that's how I'd introduce mental skills. Use those big rocks that people may know lots about, and then introduce this stuff underneath, which is deep in theory and research, and but explained at a level that they know and understand. It's not like it's any of the wording's uncommon.
Well, it's about making it relatable, isn't it? That's what you're doing.
Yeah. So as I guess, and this is one thing that I'm constantly trying to work on, and that's making the tools, you're talking across to someone as opposed to down to someone. And that's massive, because if you're working with an athlete that's 8 years old, you need to be able to explain the same process or similar processes to that athlete that you would to someone that may be 30 years old. And so my mentor, Jean Gavala, so he's the one of the Olympic sports psychologists or performance psychologists, and he's working, also works for the New Zealand Rugby Union. He said to me, he's like, explain it to a 5-year-old. And I just sat there and was just like, that's a tough one. And this is about 3 years ago now. And ever since then, before I actually go into the session, it's just like, okay, can a 5-year-old understand what I'm about to say? And then you go, oh.
That's interesting.
Maybe I have to use a different, word to resilience. Like, resilience might be too big. And it's just like, okay, cool. So when you have a bad performance, how do you get back on top and have a good performance? Just little things like that. But that's how I introduce it. Those big rocks that, like, for example, it could be anxiety. It could be, or performance anxiety, sorry. It could be they're not really focused on the task. It could be they're not taking those losses as they should, as a learning experience. Just those things that all athletes may have encountered at some point in their career.
For people who are interested in trialing mental skills, or they've like already had some sort of exposure to it, like, where can you start without like the help of someone like you being there on the other end of the phone or the video or whatever? Like, what are some of the most common things? Like, I see a lot within endurance sports of, I guess, expectations and competition and, you know, like the, not obviously only one person can win, but you'll often have time or a lot of outcome driven thinking. So yeah, maybe like talk around, the, you know, building up processes.
From my point of view, when we talk about process focused, compared to outcome focused, when we start thinking about the outcome, we start forgetting about all the stuff we've got to do before we get to the outcome. So if we break it down into a downhill race, if I'm sitting at the top of the hill and I go, all right, I'm going to get first, and I'm sitting there and I'm pretty sure of myself, and it's just like, cool, awesome. Like, you can be sure of yourself. That's perfect.
Yep.
But how are you going to get there? And they're going to go, all right, like, I'm going to do this turn, do this turn. Then I've got this set of whoops. I've got root section, and then I've got a steep section. And you're going, cool. So how about we just focus on that, because that's going to get you to your outcome. Use the outcome as motivation. Perfect. That's awesome. But how are you going to get there? Because if we can aid you in that space of how you're going to get there, all of a sudden you're going to give each task in here and now as much time as it needs. As a process, and process focused versus outcome focused, having an athlete in a process focus is ideal, especially when it comes to when we talk about preparing, when we talk about in the race. That's massive, yeah.
So we get more into a process focus. What are some of the most common things you're gonna be drawing on, let's say, before the race and in the race?
So I guess one tool which is massively common in mental skills, and that's visualization. So visualization refers to someone visually, with their eyes closed or open, going through the track or those important parts of the track in their head before the race starts. What that can help you do is get in this mindset of, all right, perfect, I do this corner, then I do this corner, and then I've got the whoops, then I've got the roots, and then I've got the steep section. So it's putting it all in its place, as opposed to sitting up there and just going, I'm going to get first. Because then you start winding yourself up as well, and it can be good, it can be bad. But so in preparation, the visualization's massive. There's other tools that go in and around it, which can help facilitate it, and there's other tools that would mean that you don't necessarily have to do it. But once we've got preparation sorted, in a sense that, okay, we've brought our focus back to our process, not our outcome, then we've got to introduce that into the writing. Because I would imagine everyone at some point has experienced getting about 200 or 300 meters away from the finish line, and all of a sudden starting to think about the finish line, and then you could blow out a corner. And I can imagine it's happened in XC as well, and also in endurance sports, where you start thinking about finishing as opposed to how you're going to get to the finish. So with that, we introduce some focus exercises and some set thoughts it could be, and some set triggers, some physical triggers. It could be, so if there's a massive sprint section, 200 meters before the end of the track, it's just reminding yourself at the start of that sprint section, all right, process, like process focus, not outcome, like, or process focus, or what do I do now? And it could be mental, so it could be a set thought.
So do you really take the approach of breaking it down? So for example, with mountain biking, like breaking down the track into certain sections, like you said, a route section or a sprint section, and you're really just thinking about what you have to do, not what you want to happen. Because ideally, if you do what you have to do, you'll get what you want to happen by just doing it.
Exactly. And if we think about our outcome, all of a sudden we've got all these uncontrollable factors. Another rider could come down and have an absolute blinder, and you can't control that. And they're allowed to have a blinder. I mean, that's awesome for them. So it's about, how do you ride your best race? And our best way to do that is to actually focus on the race itself. All right, cool. So let's break it down into sections. Every race is different. We need different physical cues then. So it's about using your environment to your advantage, and then building. So I always use the physical to build around, to build the mental. So it's very clear cut and there's lots of clarity. Someone can pick it up, and if you've written it down on paper and go, all right, cool, or I'm using my trigger here, 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 and here, and I've got no excuses now. It's not this wishy-washy plan that we've kind of talked about. It's almost like a routine for that race.
Yeah. When I had a trigger when I must have read it in a book somewhere. It was when I was transitioning from XC to Enduro. And so I don't know. I guess I had a really good race. And what I did is I had my tongue on the roof of my mouth. So then every race after that, I'd be on the start line. Be like, well, that race went really well. I was, you know, in this state of flow, right? Which is what we want to achieve. And that's when we're riding just perfectly. I was like, if I just keep my tongue on the roof of my mouth at the start and I just execute what I have to do, hopefully my race is going to go really good. So I used that trigger to try and bring flow back to myself for the rest of my races. It didn't work every time. But is that like something is that like what you mean like by a physical kind of trigger?
Yeah, for sure. And if we look at, I'm just trying to think of one that's relevant for downhill or even cross country. But if we look at the moto guys, their trigger is coming around the pits and the manager holding out a form or a whiteboard with the message on it. So that message serves as a trigger. So in downhill, it's quite hard because everything's moving so fast, you can't really see someone doing that. So we use sections of tracks. In cross country, you might get the chance to do that. You might get, you might have a marshal at a certain point, or you might have your coach at a certain point, which serves as that trigger. You might have a certain section of the track, which serves as that trigger, just to remind yourself about, okay, when I perform really well, and if I've got a process focus, this is my trigger to get back in that zone. So we talk about your focus, actions, thoughts, and emotions. What's your trigger? And it's going to cover one of those things, hopefully. And yeah, just kind of use it like using, like you said, the tongue on the roof of your mouth. Why don't we have like 3 or 4 of them over the track, so we can kind of switch in and out when we need to.
All right, Joe, I'm pretty conscious of your time here. You're a busy man. If we want to get in touch with you, like, are you on the socials? You got a website? Like, how do we reach out?
Cool. So I don't have social media for the purpose of keeping and helping keep the athletes' information confidential, because I don't really want to post anything about it. I have a website, which is J Barrett Performance Services, jbperformanceservices.co.nz, and then my email is jay@jbperformanceservices.co.nz,
and I'll put that in the show notes.
Oh, cool! Thanks, guys, and thanks for having me. And I hope you and your listeners got something out of it. And I didn't talk too much.
It's great. I feel like we've got a lot more questions for next time. We'll definitely have to have you back on to hit on some of the specifics. But until then, thanks heaps. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks, guys, and enjoy your day.
Thanks, Jet.
You too. See ya.